Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And our guest tonight is an avid walker. I couldn't think of something really fast.
Adjective.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I've made you gun shy about adjectives.
I have, yes. but I mentioned that because today was a special day.
That's true.
The Astoria Warrenton Chamber of Commerce had their Great Columbia Crossing 10K. Did you do it?
No, I actually am volunteering.
Ooh. Nice. So instead of walking, which you do every day.
Every day. And I keep saying, yes, I'm going to go out and I'm going to walk across the bridge, take my camera.
Yes.
Nope. I end up volunteering for everything and I miss the walk.
See, that's important though. So
it is.
You make it possible for 3,500 people.
And that's the tease on our guest tonight too.
Oh.
Walker, bird watcher, photographer. And volunteer.
Exactly.
That's a great combination.
Yeah. Shelley Von Kolvitz, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And you have helped organize in the past.
I have.
And you walked.
All of the
signs. Or did you run?
Oh, never run. I don't run unless someone's chasing me, like a child usually.
Yeah.
So no, walk. But
well,
it
you're
is gorgeous.
Chasing a child.
But yes, all of the signs at the chamber that you use that say, great job, I'm a fabulous volunteer, I made those.
Nice.
Wow, nice.
Yes. Because I'm a firm believer that producing your own message matters.
It does.
So there saying I am fabulous is something that should be said often.
Absolutely.
I'm good enough. I'm smart enough.
I'm a rock star. That's the other one.
There
I'm
you
a
go.
Rock star. Yep. They have little wands. I mean, yep. It's kind of fun.
Those do amuse me.
Yeah, you do like those. Mac.
I think they made their first appearance the time that I was in it.
It could be.
I think that was the year.
Well, it was the first year that we were not allowed to have bags.
Yes.
And so it was really not appreciated, and a lot of people were angry, so I felt like I needed to up that positive messaging as much as possible.
See, though, it wasn't anything about, like, terrorism or anything. It was you're lightening the load, making it easier by not allowing bags or backpacks.
Correct. Right. Sort of.
Maybe.
But in the end, it's so much easier, and there's so much less junk.
That's right.
You know, because people were just overwhelmed, I think, with... Because you don't need it.
You start abandoning stuff, just like the pioneers.
Well,
like
they
the pioneers
do. They drop it along the way, and it's where did
they
put this?
They do, and it's a highway. So then, yeah. So
see, I would like to sneak in something like Giant, just to surprise people afterwards.
Don't you dare!
Like an anvil.
No.
Or something. It'd be like the pioneers heading west, just abandoning pianos.
I won't let them,
and things
folks.
Like that.
Don't worry. Nope.
All right. So we get right to
yes,
it because we got
to
guess.
So. Yes.
Oh, the big return. Talking Tombstones. Stay tuned.
Oh, yes, coming soon.
After 2 years of COVID hiatus. We're
exciting.
Coming back last Sunday in October, Talking Tombstones. It's going to be at Ocean View Cemetery.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's all going to tie into the 1922 fire.
Okay.
Oh,
perfect. Everybody's going to have a connection somehow, some way, to the 1922
nice.
Fire.
That's deep tease.
So, yeah, it's going to be fun. And, okay. And we'll be in the mausoleum as well.
Oh, I like
We've
that.
We've only been in there twice.
I like that.
So,
okay.
A firefighter named Shorty.
Oh. That's so good.
And we're going to try and get somebody really tall to play him.
I can think of that who that could be.
All right. But so we have anything else or shall
nope,
I get right
let's
to
do
okay.
it.
So these are things that happened on October 10th. Let's see. 1865. John Wesley Hyatt patents the billiard ball made from cellulose nitrate celluloid in Albany, New York.
Interesting.
So the modern day.
Right.
Like pool balls. There
and,
you go.
And he patented it.
Patented it. Before okay. that, they were like clay.
Oh,
I can imagine.
And probably all different, right?
Probably. Okay.
Probably didn't roll straight.
Yeah, they're probably like
all over the place.
I wonder if everybody's game got better after that.
Oh,
one would imagine.
Yeah.
1871, speaking of fires, the Great Chicago Fire.
Ooh.
After 3 days, the fire is finally extinguished. Mm. On this day, 300 people dead, 100,000 homeless, and more than $222 million in damages.
Oh, my gosh.
Poor Chicago.
Looking at the time frame,
oh,
was significant.
Yeah, oh my
that's
goodness,
that's a huge amount.
Hard to recover.
1877, yeah. Colonel. I wonder if they built the Liberty Theater after they rebuilt, like we We did. All right. 1877, Colonel George Custer's funeral is held at West Point.
Okay. Yep. I saw that.
Custer. 1886. And I should have done more research on this because this is kind of interesting to me. 1886, the first dinner jacket, a tuxedo, is worn to the autumn ball at Tuxedo Park, New York.
Hmm. Okay.
Could that be the birth of tuxedos?
Tuxedos. I was going to say, did that name exist for a jacket at the time? Maybe it was the event, the city.
The dinner jacket became the tuxedo.
Exactly.
So from the things never change category, I had to put this one in. 1900, in Manchuria, Russia captures the major city of Mukden, part of their own plan to take over the whole province. Mm. Oh, Russia, when will you stop?
Still going on.
Aren't they big enough?
Yeah.
1973, Vice President Spiro Agnew resigns.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then 2004.
Well, but you skipped a little bit amid allegations of tax evasion.
And he was always the law and order guy.
Right. And so he's later convicted and sentenced to, wait for it, 3 years of probation.
Of course.
Yeah.
There are benefits to being in public office.
Which I almost made that the history highlight of the day because it leads to Gerald Ford, who then says, okay, you know, we can't dwell on this. Let's give Nixon pardon and just move on.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Okay.
But 2004, Superman Christopher Reeve dies at age 52. I forgot how young he was.
He was very young. I was actually back there working at the University of Virginia at the time he had his accident.
Oh.
And it was very unusual because it's Charlottesville. It's, you know, it's not close to Richmond, but, you know, it's a bit of a drive and a bit of a drive from Washington, D.C. And all of a sudden outside, there were camera crews coming in. And just all of a sudden, the whole area was just engulfed in camera crews.
Oh, wow.
And everybody was very quiet about it. No one had a clue what was going on. Mm. But you couldn't go. If you went outside, you couldn't get back in. And of course, I was a visitor because I was working there. So it turned out after a half a day of the publicity coming out that he was there.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, it was quite something.
Interesting.
Brush with greatness we didn't expect.
I know.
Yeah.
Neat. But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history. 1845, the U.S. Naval Academy opens.
Hmm.
I knew you were gonna be like, that's not a strong one.
Yeah,
but it's the Navy.
It's the Navy. Yes.
You know, we like the Navy, even if we love the Coast Guard, we still like the Navy.
Yes.
Yeah. And see, I would have thought it would have been earlier than that.
Right.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. It just doesn't.
They still existed. Just yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I missed?
You missed a birthday, and this is a sad one. But 1963, Daniel Pearl, the journalist, was born in 1963, and I think it's important to remember him because he is remembered mostly for his death. He was murdered in Pakistan by Al-Qaeda, and he was a journalist. And so,
you always like the journalists.
I do. And that's a tough job. And that certainly is sort of one of those worst case scenarios. And it doesn't happen frequently. But violence against journalists does happen pretty frequently, especially in war zones. So, yeah.
See, I'm always amazed at reporters, whether they're TV, whether they're print, that can just go into a war zone. I'm kind of amazed at that.
Well, right. I mean,
where they know they're hated.
Right. Exactly. There's huge risk.
Well,
right?
There's a lot of risk, but I think the attitudes have changed recently with the internet and everything else that you see that they're more accepted, but they are very vulnerable because they put themselves in harm's way.
Exactly.
And I remember the first night that Ukraine was invaded in Kiev, and there was a journalist from Britain standing talking, and this bomb went off, and the guy just, he didn't know what to do. And he left and came back and he had a flak jacket off. And I thought to myself, what's that going to do if a big bomb comes and hits your hotel? But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a risk, but there's so much more reporting now compared to Vietnam War, any of issues and conflicts we've been involved with.
And the Vietnam War is a great example of why, I mean, of really a change in the tide, because journalism was really
Live and pertinent. In your face.
It was.
Never been before.
Right.
Right.
So
always sanitized.
Without that information from real journalist folks. Real,
yes.
Real ones.
Yes. Yeah, let's not forget that.
Alana's getting her hackles up.
Yeah. Okay. We can move on. But, well, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Yeah. Let's just start with a little bit. So you started talking about what you were on the East Coast.
Yep.
And that's where you were born and raised?
No, actually, I hate to say it, Native Californian.
Oh, there you go.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah. And, goodbye. See you next week. No. Yeah. No, I was told when I came up here, actually, it wasn't until I moved here. I actually came up here to go to college. So my freshman year in college, I had the choice of going to a school in California, and I wanted adventure, wanted something different. And I got into the University of Oregon, and I was from a very small high school, and I got into Merrillhurst in Lake Oswego. So I kind of weighed the two, what would be better. So I took Merrillhurst to go.
Lovely.
So that was really nice. And I had a then friend who now ended up being my sister-in-law who was going to University of Oregon at the time. And I thought, well, that would be kind of fun to have at least somebody I know up there, such a large school. But I loved going to Merrillhurst, but came back from spring break and the sisters got us all together and said, we aren't opening next fall. And here it is, May already, April, May. What do we do? Well, they were so gracious in coordinating schools in the area and reaching out to schools all over the country. So I didn't know what to do. Should I stay up there, go to Lewis and Clark? What should I do, go to Oregon? I didn't know what to do. So I ended up going back home and ended up going to Mills College in Oakland, California, but then transferring to UC Berkeley. And then I've been all over before. And then I ended up coming back here. I would have never, ever thought that when I moved back to Oregon, it would have been to the same town that I went to college in.
Oh.
And to see the transformation. I mean, I banked at the same bank I used to bank at.
How many years separation there?
Oh, don't ask me now. It was a few.
And what'd you go to school for?
Well,
I mean, what made you want to go?
I was going to major in Germanic studies. So I wanted to do German. So I'd have two classes. Or one class, an intensive class, twice a week, all in German. And it was so tough. And that's what I did. And then when I transferred, they didn't have such a degree. And at the time, when you're looking for schools, you can't even look at what you wanted to do. You just go. So I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was looking more at computer science just because my boyfriend at the time was into geeky stuff. And I thought maybe that would be good. And then when I went transferred to UC Berkeley, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was looking at more athletic development and kinesiology kind of thing. But then I got married and we moved to Wisconsin. So I had to start all over again. So I ended up doing actually a self major in exercise studies through the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, one of the side branches, and the University of Wisconsin in Madison, but I got my degree from the Milwaukee campus.
What? So, but what were you going to do with Germanic studies?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. You know,
I mean, talk about picking a hard.
I know. I have no idea. It was just something that they offered, and I heard that the instructor was well known in his field, and it was like, oh well, you know, how many kids go to school having a clue back, you know, in the 70s what they wanted to do.
It's true.
So, yeah.
I kind of love that. Yeah. I was thinking there's going to be some connection like, oh, my grandparents were from Germany or we visited there.
Well, that's also an interesting. So I'm adopted. Mm-hmm. Never really knew my heritage, but my adopted parents had a German and English background. So I found out when I was adopted that they try to match you up as close as you can to your birth parents. But it was like, well, they didn't even know what they were, but they knew a little bit enough to match it up. So you could always tell, now I'm not their child, but to me, it didn't make any difference. But now it turns out that my number one is Germanic Europe.
Oh,
so I did the ancestry DNA thing and found out all this stuff. So yeah, it's been really
interesting. So the German blood is there?
The German blood was there, but not as much. I mean, it's still high.
And can you speak German?
I used to be able to do it fluently, but not anymore. Guten Tag is about all I can say.
Guten Tag.
Yeah.
So what age were you adopted?
I was 9 months old.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was in one foster home for that entire period of time after I got out of the hospital. I was born very small, very early. And I stayed with them. And when the social services department in California handed me over to my adoptive parents, there was a little teeny book that the foster family kept track of my development and everything, which was interesting to go back and look at, because here you're at 9 months old, you still only weigh 5 pounds.
Oh,
but
my
I was
goodness.
2 pounds when I was born. So thinking back 67 years ago, to be born at that birth weight and to have survived, let alone not have any complications, because at the time, incubators were just really coming into use, and a lot of the children were becoming blind because of the too much oxygen in the incubators.
Oh my goodness.
So I had a couple family friends that were twins, that both girls were blind, that were born within the same year that I was.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I'm very grateful.
And did your family, did your parents have other children as well?
Nope. I was the first one. Okay. My parents were older. And when it came down to I wanted another sibling, they
you
said,
negotiated.
You're too old. Yeah. You're too old. My parents, you can't have any. So they did a private adoption, and then they adopted another sister.
Oh, I was guessing you got a dog or a cat at that point. That was the negotiation.
That's pretty impressive, though. I mean, it worked.
Yeah. It did. It did.
You're like, okay.
I kept going, I'm alone. I want a sibling. Okay, fine. Yeah. Everybody gets a horse, I get a sister.
Yeah, there you go. That's pretty good, though.
Yeah. That's fun.
So, yeah.
So what led to going to Wisconsin? You said you got married, but what was there a family connection there with?
So we did have family members in Wisconsin. I had my mother's cousin lived there, but it was my now ex-husband, but dear friend right now, who went back to go to graduate school.
Okay.
So when we were dating and he graduated from UC Berkeley, he said, well, I've talked to this school and this school. We're moving to Milwaukee. Well, I thought he meant Milwaukee, Oregon.
Yeah, like I went down the road.
Yes, because he was looking at the University of Oregon, OHSEO.
Okay.
I went, great, I'm going back. He goes, no, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Where's that? California, where are you taking me?
Is that a bit of a culture shock?
It was, and I didn't really learn to appreciate what the city had to offer until actually I left. We were there for 8 years. Both my children were born there. They will not admit they're cheeseheads, but they were both born there. And it wasn't until I went back that I really learned to appreciate the cultural diversity of that city is incredible. I mean, we partook in everything that happened. You know, they'd have festivals every weekend in different parts of town. But you knew if you lived in southeast Milwaukee, you know, you were Polish. If you lived in northeast, you were German. You know, and everybody had their location. So if you wanted a certain food type, instead of going to Safeway and looking in the ethnic aisle, you would go to that particular area in town and find your ethnic bakeries or meat shops or whatever. And so that was really very, very interesting.
Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have thought of the food.
No.
Oh, yeah. Either. Yeah. Yeah.
So what leads from Wisconsin eventually back to Oregon?
Well, there was a brief stop in Seattle for a few years, and then an opportunity came up down here, and it was like, okay, let's move back. Well, we ended up in Portland, so that was great, but it wasn't until years later that I'd done a few bits around the country that my daughter came out here looking at a job. She had moved, she was working in Boston, moved back to go to graduate school, and couldn't find a job in Portland. So she came out to Astoria. I had been out to Astoria once in my life.
Oh, wow.
I said, you're not going out unless I'm going out. So we get in the car, we drive out here. And I think that was 2010. And I said, while you're interviewing, I'm going to interview locals. So I would just, like Joe Blow on the street, I'd stop and talk to him. And everybody's looking at me like, oh, my God, this lady's crazy. But I went into the Inferno Lounge, and I talked to a very nice gentleman about what he thought. He was a transplant from Seattle. Said, if you like sideways rain in December, you got it. And if you like a town that closes down at 8:39, you're okay. And I went, okay. And then I went to Joann's Fabrics and various other places. And I thought, well, you know, if it's a good place to start your career, if you get this job, that's it.
So when did you previously visit, the one visit? What's the time frame?
Probably, I'm guessing 2008, 8 or 9, maybe.
Okay, so it wasn't 20 years apart.
No, it wasn't 20,
other.
No. Okay. But it was just kind of a whistle stop, you know, went through, went, okay, going to keep going. Yeah. And then my very dearest friend also in the time frame bought a second home in Gearhart. So I was visiting her there. So that was also a big draw when it came back to where do you want to end up?
Because you traveled all over.
I traveled all the time.
And your job took you. So what job did you land on with all of your background?
Yeah, good question. So, yeah. So I ended up going into actual medical research.
Okay.
And I did all the work prior to the FDA getting the documents to sign off on a certain product. Mm-hmm. And them going through. So I was like the enforcer. The title, no one really understands, but it was more like a quality medical monitor. So you would go through and examine medical records to make sure that they were following the procedures that we had mapped out for them to follow. Because any aberration off the beaten track doesn't really follow what we're studying, and you have to rein them in. So it was really fun because it took me all over the world.
All over the world?
All over the world, yeah.
So, well, explain that to me. Like, where were you going? Were you going to labs or?
Yeah, going to labs and hospitals and private labs, and because you have to get diversity. So sticking just in the U.S. is going to get you a certain population, but if you want to market this drug or device, you need to take it everywhere. So I would go to Australia, I'd go to Europe, I'd go to Canada, go to China, Japan. So you get this great diversity in subjects.
And what can you say any products or drugs that you were part of that we would recognize?
Well, yeah, one of them devices were coronary stents, the little mesh tubing that you put in your artery to keep them open. That was my primary.
Okay.
We did them in the brain. We did them in the legs, peripheral stents. So that was, and you have, of course, a regimen you have to follow because you have to go on certain drugs. Even though we didn't study drugs, the drugs were part of our procedure that they had to do that.
And what kind of a lead time is there for something like that between somebody came up with this idea and everyone's getting it if they're going to their doctor and you need this put into you?
Right. Well, drugs take a long time. They've been expedited, as we all know, with the COVID vaccines. But it depends. We never really heard about what engineering was doing until it was actually a concept that they knew that they could take into patients because they would do the animal studies first to see how they worked. And then when that was safe and effective, then they would bring it to the people. Yeah.
And so we talk, I mean,
we never know what we're going to get here on Adventures in History.
Yeah, I know. Things you never do. Yeah.
Well, now I'm fascinated too, because we, like you just mentioned, we're kind of becoming, you know, experts. Oh, it's an FDA emergency approval.
I was so surprised when that came up because I was listening to what people saying, going, oh, you have no idea what you're talking about. But there is all this terminology that people now we're hearing about that only us, this secret, group of
us
knew.
So when should we actually expect full FDA approval for the vaccines that we're taking?
Well, it could be a while because they're going to continue to compile data. So I encourage people that when you get the information, or you have a booster or anything, and you have that V-safe that the CDC keeps information on, to sign up for it because it's a long-term safety and efficacy that they want to get the data. Yep. So they're looking for adverse events. They're looking at not what just happened in the first month or 6 months, but a year. So I just got a notification the other day for one of the boosters I got last year. And I'm like, which one was it? You know, I have to remember and go back. But it's really important because they want to know how you're feeling and, has anything unusual happened.
And if you've gotten COVID, too.
Exactly. And they do ask that.
I've done the V-safe. It's very simple. It's like five questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
If even that. Maybe it's even three.
Yeah.
It's really,
it depends on how you answer them, But it's very simple.
And what size and length of time for something like the stints that you were part of? How many people are you actually looking at and tracking and following, and for how long before it's really in widespread use?
It changes with the device and what you're looking at for an endpoint. So an endpoint is they might determine that certain condition has to happen. So you look for that, and you, it normally how long would it happen? Do you look for it longer the same amount of time. It's so deep detailed. I'm trying
so
to be vague.
Yeah,
for purpose. So everyone is different. Every study is different. But we had studies that would go for 6 weeks and some that would go for 2 years because you have to find an enrollment population. You have to meet all these different, and the statisticians would come back and say, oh yeah, you don't have this many people. You need to go out and find males under the age of 35. Right. And so it might be that it's taking a little bit longer.
This is where I do love statistics.
Yeah. Lots of math.
And you could have told me, oh, it's sometimes 6 months, and sometimes it's 60 years, and sometimes it's 200 people, and sometimes it's 2 billion people you have to look at.
Right.
And I would be like, okay, sure.
Yeah. And it depends, too, on the willingness of the participants. Right. So you can't just sign up anybody. You have to follow, you know, first of all, the hospitals have to approve it, and that's a big, big procedure. And then you have to go and get physicians who are, of course, trained in research, which, you know, you get a lot that are not. And those are the ones that sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And then your patient population. So you might go to a small town, say like Astoria, and you might get a very, very great patient population because people are really interested. But then you might go to a big city and you're just like, oh, I thought this place would enroll, and they're not.
Interesting.
So it just depends. It's, you know.
But we skew it because we all eat fish, and fish has impact on whatever you're studying.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Eat that salmon.
Well, that was an amazing, fun tangent. But we also wanted to talk about why you love Astoria.
Yeah, why I love Astoria.
Bird watching and hiking.
And, exactly.
And walking.
Yeah.
Walk everywhere.
Yeah. So I have to say, I volunteer for everything.
Yes,
so it's what I don't do when I'm not doing, I'm volunteering. So I love doing that, but it definitely brings me out in the outdoors to meet people, which is what I love about Astoria. And the photography opportunities, walking the Riverwalk, and you know, going to all the various great places there are along the Columbia River and the Pacific Ocean. It's just a wonderful place to be.
And for photography, is it wildlife or the scenery or
everything?
Everything.
Yeah, mostly wildlife. I'm really stuck on the white pelicans right now. It's like bald eagles used to be my thing. It's like, it's just an eagle. But the white pelicans have me mesmerized.
They are beautiful.
They
are. And where's your best place to take photos?
Well, right along the Riverwalk is really a good place, but I'm finding now Young's Bay is where it's a great place to go. But since I walk a lot and I don't drive very much anymore, it's kind of hard to get over there. So unless I'm going to see the granddaughter or doing something along the other side of the river, then I don't go over.
So far away over
it
there.
It is
in, you know,
over there in Warranted. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a day trip, you know.
5 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And you might I might guess the answer, but your favorite place to walk, is it the Riverwalk or are there other
spots?
It is, but I do
Fort Clatsop. I'll do Fort Stevens. I love walking out at Fort Stevens. It's really fun now that they've expanded the Frisbee golf course to go and, you know, avoid all the people throwing frisbees, but that's a lot of fun. You never know what you're going to see when you're out there.
That is a beautiful place.
It is. I saw a coyote one day, and I think he was as shocked as I was to see him that he wasn't seeing me, and bald eagles out there, and animals that I don't know what they are.
Some I love it.
Marmot type thing. I don't know. But yeah, it's a lot. And it's just the scenery along the river.
Thank you.
It's so spectacular. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks.
Go out there and enjoy that scenery, folks. We do live
absolutely.
In a beautiful place.
We do.
So go look for Shelley.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.